Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, June 4th, 2019. I'm coming to you live from WWDC and the immediate area. And we're doing interviews with developers all week, and I'm here today with iOS developer Kendall Gellner. Hi, Kendall.
Hello.
And tell us a little bit about what you do.
So I'm an iOS developer. As I said, I had been doing independent consulting for a very long time since the release of the App Store, but just recently I started with a company, Nami ML, and so I'm with them now. What we're trying to do is basically privacy-focused sort of in-app purchase paywall system. So what we're trying to do is have a way for an app developer to find paywalls in the cloud that get kind of sent automatically into their apps and that they could play with and adjust without having to refresh their apps in the App Store. And then on top of that, though, like I said, we're kind of privacy focused and we have this machine learning approach where we're trying to figure out what are the times that users are most happy about making purchases within your apps, that they're actually more willing to actually buy something. And so that way you can avoid prompting them at terrible times. There's such a problem with in-app purchases right now. You get prompted at just all the worst times. It's so awful. I've had some truly awful experiences with just being prompted for ratings or purchases. And so we're trying to make that all a better system. And we're trying to do it in a way that we're not gathering user information to sell to other people. We're just trying to help connect the app developers with the people at the right moment when everyone's happy about supporting each other. So.
Okay. So the ML in the name then is machine learning?
Exactly. So the ML is machine learning. And like I said, it's very privacy focused. We're really kind of boiling down just the user's journey through the application and the right time for them to do something. And so that's where the most machine learning aspect comes in, is trying to figure that out.
Okay. And so yesterday, we got lots of information about what's coming. Mm-hmm. So how does that affect what you all are doing, or does it? Like, there, it may be something
it definitely
you're not
does.
Necessarily interested
I mean,
in.
For one thing, Apple is even reiterated they're doubling down on privacy. That was like a very strong message across a lot of the things they did, and all of that was very, very exciting actually for me personally. Just you know, as a person who uses iPhone and Apple stuff, to see them so strongly support user privacy and just keep giving out that message that they want to help users have their information stay confidential and that you're not selling your personal data, that is really awesome. And so that helps us in a way because we're also trying to do the same thing. And from the machine learning aspect in particular, I mean, Apple is saying, you know, they have on-device models and they're improving continuously. Mm-hmm. This time also kind of how machine learning works on the devices. They now have a way that you can kind of update the models locally, as opposed to just having to have those updated somewhere else. And so we're kind of going the same way. We're trying to use local models to do our decision making and not send anything we don't have to up to our servers. So that's a great, you know, focus for us, is that Apple is so focused on making machine learning work and really perform on device. And so we're also kind of leveraging that. So it's good to see that moving forward and just this whole concept of privacy moving forward. That's the thing that ties in closest with what we're doing, is just that the machine learning and privacy aspect is really, like, Apple is moving that forward as much as they can.
Right, and part of that, I think, comes from Apple never having been in the business of mining customer data for things.
Right.
That was never part of their business model. They sell hardware and they sell software, and they don't, like, they don't really care who has it, right, just that it gets sold. So I think, for me anyway, that's part of why, like, lumping them in with Facebook and Google and other places that are a little more careless with people's information isn't necessarily a fair comparison.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, right. Their focus, like you said, it's always, all along, never been selling it, and it's just, they've just continued on that path of just, what can we do to improve user privacy? And even though they haven't always been perfect in the past, I mean, they're trying to improve continuously in that regard. And so that is the beautiful thing about what they're trying to do, especially this year. Just so much stuff is related to that, like them improving on that front. And it's really nice to see that. So
you talked about being an iOS developer. Mm-hmm. So with what used to be Marzipan and is now Catalyst. Mm-hmm. And some of the stuff that we saw yesterday afternoon in the State of the Union talking about how to make the transition over to making Mac apps. Is that something that you yourself or you as a company are considering?
Yeah, definitely, happen? Actually. I mean, that affects us because, like I said, we're kind of focused on just helping app developers kind of prompt about when to best offer, you know, stuff around in-app purchases and kind of that information. And that definitely affects, you know, that will also affect any kind of Catalina apps that exist too, right? Because that whole system around when do you prompt for in-app purchases and things like that, that all moves on then to the Mac in those apps that that come off the iPad and go on there. So we're definitely going to look at supporting that. I mean, I'm pretty sure we will be, just because there's a need for there as much as there is a need for anywhere to help developers really gather revenue from users in a way that matters, and that'll just move on to the Mac from the iPad just as well. So yeah.
So is that a thing that you all are looking forward to, is being able to do the same thing and bring it to macOS the way that you're bringing it to iOS?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that excites me also personally as a user of apps. I think that'll mean kind of a little bit of an explosion for just kind of some nice and useful apps on the Mac. And in a way, I kind of think that might also improve just iPad apps generally, because Apple was mentioning you really have to build an iPad app first. And then that kind of comes on to Catalina. So it's not like just iPhone apps will just suddenly start springing up on the Mac. It's actually like maybe now there will be actually more iPad apps and better iPad apps, because in order to make a Mac app that works fairly well with the system, you really have to also have a nice iPad app. And so it'll improve iPad apps too.
So it has to be solid before you move on to the next platform.
It's a little bit of a nice kind of cross integration between both platforms. It'll improve both. Some people are worried about, you know, a flood of whatever kind of poorly behaving applications coming to the Mac, but I honestly see it as an improvement across the iPad and the Mac of applications coming to both platforms. I think it'll be really cool.
So, along the same lines, like, you know, you said you're an app user, you know, and doing a lot of, you know, I mean, like, we all are in some way, right?
Yeah,
like, whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this, but your iPhone has this app on it where you can, like, live, you can talk to someone live on the other end of the same, I think it's called Phone or something. Like, it's really crazy. You should check it out. I'll show it to you later. It's awesome. I think you're right about the pollination of that. So as a Mac user and as a mobile user, what do you think of them splitting off iPadOS into its own?
I think that is kind of a good idea, because there has been, for a while now, the iPad has been struggling to work as well as it could in the role that it's trying to provide, which is, you know, to be kind of, it could be a laptop replacement, but there's some little things that have kind of prevented that for some people in the past, and every year they move slowly more towards that being possible. But iPad is kind of its own thing. It is different than using an iPhone, and it is really nice that now, like, especially the USB drive integration for me for iPad is super nice. I have as a photographer also, I have a strong interest in being able to do that. And so it's great that they are able to move the iPad. Splitting it off helps them really focus on making the iPad everything it can be in this space that's distinct from the phone or even from most laptop computers as people know them. So I think it's exciting in that regard.
I think it will be. I think at least one full iteration of iPadOS is what it's really going to take, because there's still a lot of dismissal of the iPad as a valid unit of computing, I guess.
I totally agree with that.
It's for consumption.
Right.
You don't actually do stuff on your iPad. As I lean into my iPad to say, we're recording this right now using an iPad and a microphone hooked up to the iPad. That's it. It's not like you can actually do stuff with an iPad, right?
Right,
like, you can read things, and that's all. And I think that like, with the Pencil, and with folks like Pixelmator,
and Affinity
being
Photo
out there, and Affinity Photo,
yep.
And then, like, just even like all the word processing sort of stuff that, you know, because, like, you can buy a keyboard for it, and you can take that with you and have a touch typing experience anywhere you are. And making those things possible seems like, If enough people can get on board and stop dismissing it because it's not a real computer or whatever kind of excuse people have for it, I think it's gonna get really interesting. I don't think out the gate, I don't think it's gonna be all that useful, at least initially. And then I think the evolution of that is probably the thing that was announced yesterday that I'm the most curious to see how it turns out, because, like, the privacy stuff is gonna be great.
Right.
But again, it's on people to implement. So it's not something that, you know, it's not like I mean, Apple makes a great number of things available that nobody cares about or that don't get really picked up, you know, for one reason or another. So I think the iPad OS from yesterday, I think that's the biggest thing that, you know.
Right, and like I said, I believe, I mean, that gives it the chance to evolve.
Right.
And so, right, like in a way that otherwise being more tied to the iPhone, it couldn't really have any good velocity in that way that you're talking about, and now I think it can, and I think it will. I'm really sure about that because more and more I see people trying and succeeding to do things with iPads in a content creation way, like you said, that I strongly believe the iPad is an awesome content creation platform, and I also bought an iPad Pro myself. And I love that thing so much. And there's
so good.
Over time, I mean, more and more people move to doing something like that because it's just such a great experience and a great way to do things. And as long as it's possible to do everything you need to do, more and more people will be able to do that and go on to there. So.
I think so. Was there anything else specifically from the State of the Union yesterday afternoon as they got into nuts and bolts and things that excited you at all?
You know, the thing is the whole thing was a wash of just really exciting things. Like, almost everything in there was so exciting. But for me personally, it's kind of funny, one of the little tiny exciting things was actually the solar watch face being approved on the Apple Watch. Because I have used, ever since the original Apple Watch, I've just used the solar watch face because I love it so much. And it's great to see that actually expanded into a beautiful, thriving watch face to go along with all the other ones. That's a pretty neat watch face. So, but to go along with that, I mean, just like I said, the Apple login stuff was amazing. The updates for iOS 13 were all really incredible. The stuff where you can join the Mac and the iPad as a second screen, and especially being able to use the iPad as a tablet, you know, in certain software that supports normally tablets, that was perfect. I've been wondering why that wasn't really possible forever, and so there's just a ton of like little improvements across all of their platforms that are just really awesome. So yeah,
I think there's some once the betas are a bit more stable, mm-hmm. and there's a little more that can be done with those, I'm very much looking forward to what that stuff's going to look like, you know, in a couple of months, like not even
right.
release date, but. I personally adhere to the Star Trek movie rule of betas, which is you only really stick to the even-numbered ones, and then you're good. And beta 1 is not that. So I don't have it installed on anything yet.
That's very true, but I actually have to say that Swift UI also was so exciting that I am going to install whatever I need to make happen that I can actually try
that
experimenting
might just,
with Swift UI.
That might just be Xcode, and if all you have to do is install an Xcode beta, that wouldn't be so bad. I don't
right.
know that you have to have Catalina to do that, so fingers crossed. And we look forward to hearing more from you and what you are doing. Thanks.
Great.
Thanks for coming by, Kendall.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to talk.
We here at the Mac Observer would like to thank Sanebox for being a WWDC coverage sponsor for us here for 2019. I'm Dave Hamilton, and I have been a Sanebox user for almost 6 years now. Frankly, I can't imagine life without it. Put quite simply, Sanebox becomes your very trainable and very coachable partner in taming your inbox to do exactly to your liking. It starts with an initial purge of your inbox, but nothing is deleted when you sign up for Sanebox and attach it to your inbox. And by the way, it works with any inbox that you have, any mail provider, as long as it's IMAP, which everything is these days. But what Sanebox does is it goes and it purges your inbox by taking all the things that aren't sent directly to you and moving them into other mailboxes. So nothing is deleted. You can train it later to delete things if you want, but it just moves things. It moves all your newsletters into a sane news folder. It moves everything that's like receipts and sort of, you know, that type of stuff into a sane later folder so that your inbox is just left being this thing that's targeted for you. And I mentioned it's trainable because you can totally tweak Sanebox. If, for example, Sanebox puts something in sane later and you're like, no, I want that in my inbox. No problem. You just move it to your inbox. Sanebox will see that you did that. And the next time that same type of thing comes through from that same sender, boom, it stays in your inbox. Of course, the reverse is true. If there's something and you want to train it to put it in Sane Later or Sane News, you can do that and it notices what you do. I like to have my shipment notifications separated out, so I created my own Sane Shipped folder where all my USPS, FedEx, and UPS emails now just land. Let me tell you, triaging your email is so much more efficient when you can do it categorically instead of just chronologically. And this is where SaneBox really comes together. You can go through all your newsletters at once. You can go through like all your receipts and those types of things at once. It's a much different mindset than it is going through emails that are sent by other humans written specifically to you that you need to sort of think about a little bit differently. When you're trying to do all of those the same at the same time, because that's how your inbox works, it doesn't work as efficiently. This is where SaneBox comes around. Ask me sometime or learn about Sane Reminders, because that's a way to make sure nothing falls through the cracks. You've got to check this out, and you can. Go to SaneBox.com/TMO. That's the Mac Observer for TMO. SaneBox.com/TMO. You start a 2-week trial that's free, and you've got a $25 credit waiting for you in your account when you're ready to buy. Go check them out. SaneBox.com/TMO. Our thanks to SaneBox for sponsoring today's episode and being one of our WWDC conference coverage sponsors. Our thanks to SaneBox. Back to you, Kelly.
This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast live from WWDC and the WWDC area. I am here with Ish Shabazz, who is an indie Mac developer. You may know him from such fine apps as Capsicum, one that I enjoy very much. Hi, Ish.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing great. My mind is blown.
I'm a little overloaded, I think, today, because like today is kind of all intake with all the new stuff, because we've just had both the keynote from Tim Cook, and we've also had sort of the public announcement, and then we are fresh from the State of the Union.
Yeah.
And they dug into some of the nuts and bolts of those things, some of the things that were sort of casually mentioned in the initial keynote. So what stood out to you?
Absolutely. So first of all, I was surprised because there's a little kind of like debate always going on if the graphics for the conference have any like foreshadowing about things going on, and they're all emojis of various characters having their minds blown. I had no idea. See, I thought it was dark mode, but it was actually my mind being blown. So that was kind of a big deal.
Well, dark mode coming to iOS is also a thing, which might be that image is all dark
and
mode.
That's what I was thinking, right? But dark mode is like small stuff compared to the real deal, which is like Swift UI.
Swift UI
is amazing.
Mind blowing. Like,
right.
Yeah.
So I've been waiting on it for a while, and it's almost like about 5 years. So it feels like the other shoe has dropped, right? So Swift was the first shoe. Like, whoa, where'd that come from? But there's still kind of like this lingering thing. And Swift UI is the other shoe, and it's a really big deal.
Okay.
So what it does is, effectively, it makes app development and kind of UI implementation just exponentially easier. Easier to understand, easier to implement, easier to troubleshoot, easier to teach. So in all ways, just like a better way of doing things.
I feel a little bit like there was still a lot of, and I might be wrong about this, so please give me your perspective, but it always sort of felt like Swift wasn't sort of self-contained in a lot of ways, because you had to fall back to Objective-C for various things. Here and there, depending what you were trying to do. And Swift UI helps change a lot of that. It really feels like the evolution of Playgrounds, but on a fundamental level that makes it so that you can do everything in Swift.
I've been doing everything in Swift for the 5 years. It's been painful, but I've been doing everything in Swift for 5 years. So it's doable, but doing particularly like the UI stuff is so much better in a way that wasn't even doable in Objective-C. Like, this is simpler than everything that's been before in the entire ecosystem. So I'm super duper excited about
it. It felt a little bit like Swift coming again, almost, in how fundamentally different it is from what we had yesterday.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. That level.
I'm very excited to play with it. It seems like something I'm capable of doing
with my
admittedly limited Swift knowledge and my admittedly limited Objective-C knowledge.
There's some demo tutorials that I believe are interactive on the web. like, that's the level it is. So,
yeah.
Super duper duper cool, which you could never do with Interface Builder.
No.
So, yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it. What stood out to you in terms of the other stuff? Like, SwiftUI is a feature,
the big one.
Yes.
My personal one that I love,
yes,
is the pencil kit. Basically, yeah, pencil support across all the platforms for, I guess iPad, but kind of Mac now, a little bit.
Yeah.
But basically that support, because that's something that for Capsicum I really wanted to integrate, but I did not want to write myself because I knew Apple was going to do it, and then I have to do it again. So I've been like waiting, and finally that one's there. Also,
I admire your faith in Apple giving you pencil kits.
Eventually it's going to come, right? And shortcuts now. Shortcuts now having like automation and triggers such as location and time of day.
Yes.
That becomes very powerful, very cool. Also parameters in that. Really, really sweet.
Parameters look really, really interesting. Like amping up the shortcut piece, I think was a really interesting, like it was the really logical evolution. Like watching them present it was like, oh yeah, absolutely, this is where we needed to go next.
I was expecting it last year. I'm like, what? But
yeah.
Because being able to run a shortcut when I arrive at a place, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Or at a particular time of day, just makes sense.
Yes.
So I'm really, really excited to see that happen. Sign in with Apple, I thought was really neat. Really cool.
Sign in. You know,
occasionally things need to sign in. I hate sign ups, but occasionally you need them. And having Apple manage that is the perfect solution, I think.
And for me, the biggest piece of that was, it was sort of casually mentioned in the morning. Mm-hmm. They dug a little bit into the nuts and bolts in the State of the Union this afternoon. That's not the publicly streamed thing.
Right.
But it seemed like it was one of the biggest things to come out of the keynote this morning. It will be one of the biggest. It's not there yet because they just announced it. It's not going to happen until, you know, the fall when we get the new versions of operating systems and all of the stuff that goes along with that. Mm-hmm. But it seems like it's going to be one of the biggest things because you can stop using that Facebook button. You can,
sure,
you know, most people know or at least have access to the thing that holds their Apple ID password.
Right.
So making that login better is just going to make everything better. And, you know, again, the thing that they have been talking about for a while, like privacy is not a secret thing. It's not a big thing. It shouldn't be special.
Right.
Like everybody is entitled to a certain amount of privacy. And making that sign in with Apple button something that anyone can just haul off and use, I think, is really interesting. And those disposable email addresses make the rest of that even more exciting.
Yep.
And so I'm looking forward to that a lot.
It's all work on Apple. It's great for the user, great for the developer, and Apple does the work. Perfect solution. The one that I was kind of really, really, really impressed with by the polish of it is voice control. So voice control is fantastic for accessibility, and the levels to which you can have control is just mind-blowing.
And
it's so cool.
Moving accessibility up a notch, too,
right,
in the settings screen.
Absolutely.
I feel like
it's
amazing.
First class right on the first level there, which is great.
Everybody cares about it, and
but
so we're going to put it right up in the front where everybody can get to it the way they need to. And watching if you haven't seen it, listeners, go into the keynote. I'll make sure there's a comment in the show notes where you can find the time to watch the voice control in action and watch this person who has no hands on the phone at all, which was the other thing I thought was interesting,
right,
was Touch ID makes this completely possible because it just looks at your face. You
right,
say,
doing
wake
like
up, and
ID,
it goes,
yep,
oh, hey, it's you. And then it unlocks, and you're off to the races with your phone.
And really, really watching cool. The
control is just astounding.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, even in the
live demo, like we got the live demo this afternoon, it stumbled a little. But it was really interesting to see somebody like live on stage walking through that.
Absolutely. Even doing things like doing the multiple zoom, like repeat the action four times.
Repeat four times.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That was really amazing. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that and really hoping that more apps include accessibility like, from the very beginning.
Because it's so much easier now.
For sure.
As that bar lowers and lowers and lowers, the excuses people have for why it's not implemented
get
flimsier and flimsier.
For sure.
And like they said, everybody should be able to use out of the box.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
Super.
Yeah. So is there anything else, aside from what you've seen, is there anything that you're looking forward to this week?
My brain's tripping on me. There's so many things going on. Those were the highlights right now, but I just need to dive into so much stuff. So if you notice, I mentioned all those things. Didn't even talk about Catalyst, which is the official name for Marzipan.
Yeah.
So that's comes after all these. Like, there's just really so much.
There is.
Yeah.
So do you, as an iOS developer,
yes,
makes apps that are very interesting and very useful in multiple places, like Capsicum. How does something like Marzipan impact your development? Like we saw in the keynote, there's literally a checkbox that you check, and then you now have the possibility of a Mac version. So how exciting is that to you? How interesting is that to you as a primarily an iOS developer?
Right. So coming into the conference, the two things I wanted: pencil support and a way to bring my iOS app to the Mac.
Okay.
Got both of those. It's coming, so I am very interested in it. I don't believe in that checkbox. I think that checkbox is deceptive. But I do appreciate that there is a path towards victory.
Yeah.
So I look forward to playing with that and getting more familiar with it, and then eventually bringing Capsicum to the Mac. So
That's great. That's one of the things I wanted to find out about, was like, from a developer's perspective, how interesting is that stuff to you? Because I assume there are some people who aren't necessarily interested in having a Mac version. I don't know who any of those people are, because most of the people I know have apps like yours. Of course I want to have all of this data in all of these places.
I think the challenge is being able to, first, it's a new skill set. It was a new skill set, now not so much. And so the learning curve was not attractive, and then the maintenance curve is not attractive, right?
Yes.
So that was the issue before, and that's basically gone now. Because now, with Swift UI, it's cross-platform right out of the box. So if you're doing anything new with that, then you get it anyway. So, and I think they said in spring, all apps are going to be kind of required to be on all screens.
Mm-hmm.
Have the ability to be on all screens without letterboxing and such. So I think that in the future, there's going to be more and more apps that are compatible kind of with Mac. There's still some specific Mac things you have to kind of take care of, like menus and keyboard shortcuts and things like that, to kind of be a good Mac citizen. It's really important. But I think there's definitely a lot of the heavy lifting has been done for us in getting us there, like setting us on the right course. So I'm really looking forward to doing it.
I'm looking forward to see what you do with it. And awesome. I'm very excited to get to try out Capsicum for Mac. That's going to be a lot of fun. And where can people find you?
Mostly on Twitter. I'm on Twitter like all the time at iShabazz, iShabazz. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I'm just Twitter all day long.
Nothing Twitter else. Xcode. Right?
Yep, basically.
There you go. All right, well, thanks so much for coming by, and I hope we'll have you back soon to talk about the next thing that you're working on.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Thanks.
All right, thanks.